Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, good people. I'd like to welcome you to the McKinsey Business Forum, the show all about handling the business of running your business. I'm your host, Monique McKinsey, and
I'm Jamie McKinsey.
Welcome to your forum, our forum, on this 29th day of the new year. Thanks so much for tuning in. Today's show features Walt Goodrich, also known as the Passion Prophet and author of the book Turn Your Passion into Profit, as well as the Million Dollar Man, Andrew Morrison. Both of these entrepreneur coaches have been featured on major television shows, national magazines, and newspapers, and now they are here with you. They're here to help you grow your business and solve your business problems right on the spot. But most importantly, we'll be hearing directly from you, the Small Business Owners of America, because that's what this forum is all about, you.
You're listening to the McKinsey Business Forum with Monique and Jamie McKinsey. If you have a question or would like to comment, the number to call is 914-338-1504.
Before we start our business forum, Jamie, let's discuss some of this week's top news stories.
Well, Monique, of course, this week's story primarily deals with the economy, and the economy. The good, the bad, the ugly of it all. First, the good. Obama gets support for his economic stimulus package. The Democratic-controlled House approved President Obama's $819 billion stimulus package last night. All of the Republicans opposed the deal. They argue that the plan is short on tax cuts and long on spending. It calls for $544 billion in federal spending, $275 billion in tax cuts for individuals and businesses. The objective of the bill is to increase jobs and put more money in the hands of the Americans. Next, the bad. Unemployment continues to rise. Large companies from all sectors are making job cuts. Starbucks is laying off 6,700. Time Warner AOL is cutting 700 jobs. IBM has cut thousands of jobs this past week. Other companies that expect major layoffs are Boeing, Pfizer, Home Depot, just to name a few.
Even with the president's economic stimulus package, this economy is likely to experience major job losses throughout this year. So, good people, that's why a show like this is so important, because we are looking forward to you building your business and not so much relying on that 9-to-5. Jamie?
More on the bad news, unfortunately. There'll be more layoffs funds needed for banks. Government officials say they need to revamp the bailout plan that was just approved this past fall. According to them, banks need to at least another $1 to $2 trillion for recovery. That's because the remaining $350 billion from the original bailout has already been earmarked for automakers and troubled homeowners.
Now, this begs the question, where will this additional money come from, and how will it affect the country's already deep debt? The government has to consider how much money they can still pump into these banks before these entities become government-owned. That would change the entire structure of the American banking system. So this $1 to $2 trillion is not just a matter of money right now. A big bailout of this nature could really change the American banking system.
Which leads us to the ugly. And unfortunately, this is a gruesome scene where a California man has decided to wipe out his entire family before killing himself on news of being laid off from Pfizer. in respect for his family, will leave his name out. But police arrived on a gruesome scene in Wilmington, California, where they found him, his wife, and five children lying dead based on the letter that he left, stating that he was better off for his children to take this route as opposed to leaving at the hands of foster care. Now, this story touches me personally because I'm as a father who may face layoffs himself. And as many one story speaks for so many more, there are many more individuals who might be confronted with these same crossroads. I mean, the news is bleak, the economy is always depressing, and the future doesn't seem too bright right now. But there are so many other alternatives. And if you find counseling, seek God if you believe in God, religious guidance, even face the red tape of the unemployment agencies. Tell or talk to anyone, but most of all, just hold on. We will get through this.
Yeah, Jamie, I was pretty touched by that story as well. I really don't know what that gentleman was thinking, but what I do know is that it's time for us to take charge of our futures. And hopefully, this today's topic, turning your passion into profit, will help our listeners be able to do that. Right now, you're listening to the McKenzie Business Forum with Monique and Jamie McKenzie. If you'd like to ask a question or a comment, the number to call is 914-338-1904. Up next is the Empowerment Minute, and we'll be talking to our empowerment coach, Nashawn Turner, right after this. Nashawn Turner, are you with us?
I am. Hello, Monique. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hello, James.
Hi, Nashawn. How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. Well,
okay.
Today, I'm sorry.
I said, okay, take it away.
All right. Well, I just want to talk again about SMART goals. We started last week talking about them, and we dealt with the acronym, the S of the SMART goal acronym, which stands for specific. And basically we talked about specific goals are goals that are clear. These are goals that are precise, and they're focused with a purposeful end. The more specific you are, the more likely you are to achieve your intended goal. But today we want to talk about a measurable goal. How do you know when your goal is measurable? And that's the M part of the acronym SMART. When something is measurable, it indicates to you that you have accomplished your goal. Basically, a measurable goal is something that you can actually see and experience as a result of the goal being that specific. For example, if your goal is to increase your customer base by 10% by talking with at least 20 new people a week, and out of those 20 people that actually have two of them to become customers, then you have a measurable goal. One thing that I want everyone to remember is seeing is believing for most of us who set goals and plan to achieve them. When goals are measurable, it strengthens your belief that setting goals and going after them are indeed possible. Always go after a goal that will look you in the face and say, what you see is what you have persevered after and obtained. That is the measurable goal for today.
Well, thank you so much, Nashawn. We really appreciate that.
Well, thank you for having me. And if you want any more information, you can always look on my website at www.uniquelydesignedcoaching.com.
Thanks again. We'll see you next week, Nashawn.
All righty. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Take care. Next up, we have Business on Blast. This week's business is Smells Good, an online business that sells natural beauty products. owned by the McVeigh family. Today we have the wife, ITEL, and she. ITEL, and she's going to
tell us about her company. ITEL?
That's right. It's ETL. But that's fine. How you doing, Monique?
Sorry.
No problem. Wait. Monique and Jamie, how's it going?
Hi. How are you, ETL?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. So Smell Good. Smell Good is a company that centers around bath and body, but however, initially, and the main specialty is our fragrance oil blends. We started back in 98, basically because we enjoyed fragrance oils and incense, but the only thing about that is the fragrance oils could only be purchased from peddlers on the street. And so since we enjoyed it so much, we could never find the peddler to get the oil again. So we said, hey, why don't we start our own business with fragrance oils and incense? So in 98, we had a meager supply of oils and typical incense. But then as time went on, we decided to go ahead and blend our own fragrances, which is really what torpedoed our business, because people were really enjoying that, and then taking those same fragrances and dipping incense without these solvents and things like that that comes with store-bought incense. And so then we went into the body care because of the ingredients that we found in the stores weren't actually helping our skin at all. So we said, how about we research and get into the natural ingredients and start blending our own creations. And whereas the customer could customize any of those creations with the fragrance oil. So that's been a big success for us.
Michelle, what do you do for the company specifically?
I actually do the creations, the research, the creations, the networking, all that. And my husband actually works on our website, and he does all of our commercials, like our videos for online networks like YouTube and Vidler and things like that.
Now, is this your full-time job?
This is my full-time, along with homeschooling. But, yeah, this is my full-time job.
Well, I just had a quick question. Obviously, today's topic is about passion. Where was the passion that you found in your company? Was it the startup? Was it your day-to-day where you're at now, or was it the results that you give and pass on to your customers?
Wow. I have to say it's actually all of those above. The startup was exciting when we saw that people were actually responding positively to what we were doing. The day-to-day, I enjoy that. I just want to point out that although it's been 10 years, the ongoing flow of the business really was not until like 6 or 5 years ago when the networking began and putting the name out there and just working on customer retention and things like that and the customer spreading the word. So I really enjoy when the product leaves and the customer receives it and they actually respond to their enjoyment of it. So I enjoy every aspect of it, of this business.
Okay, so what's next for Smell Good?
There are many, many goals set for Smell Goods. At present, I'm actually putting other goals into the business, like as far as grassroots organizations for girls and philanthropy on that end. And we are looking at, just a lot of other major things that I don't think I'll disclose right now, but there's some exciting things coming for Smell Good. So.
Good.
How can people get in contact with you and purchase some of that great product?
They can visit us online at www.smellgoodspa.com.
Okay, can you give that to Smith one more time, a little slowly, please, so everybody could grab their pens and write that down?
Sure. www.smellgoodspa.com.
ETL of Smell Good. Thank you so much for joining the McKenzie Business Forum.
Thank you for having me.
Great.
And good luck with you and your company.
Thank you. Bye.
Again, you're listening to the McKenzie Business Forum with Monique and Jamie McKenzie. If you have a business that you'd like us to put on blast, email us at monique@smallbusinessbootcamp.biz. Or if you have a question or a comment, the number to call is 914-338-1504. Next up, we have our special entrepreneurial coaches. Today's show features Walt Goodrich, also known as the Passion Prophet, and author of the book Turn Your Passion into Profit, as well as the man I call the Million Dollar Man, Andrew Morrison. Both of these entrepreneurial coaches have been featured on major television shows, national magazines, and newspapers, and now they are here with you. They're here to help you grow your business and solve your business problems right here, right now. So without further ado, I would like to introduce all of you to our special guests. Andrew, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much for having me on your program.
No problem. Walt, are you there?
Yes, Monique. Thank you for having me. Monique, hi, James.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, good.
Great. Well, first off, I want to start with Walt, and then I'll go to Andrew. I just want you to briefly tell us what you've been able to do for companies and what people can expect from you when they develop that coaching relationship.
Okay. First of all, what I do is I help people discover their passion in life and turn it into a business. So if I were coaching somebody, there are a set of questions that I would ask to determine a little bit more about them, because everyone's needs are a little bit different. And the process that I show people is slightly different from what you might expect from a business coach. And I mentioned this to you, Monique, in our conversation before the interview, that one of the first things that I do with someone is I help them discover their purpose in life. So let me just back up for a second. There's a four-step process that I would take you through to help you turn your passion into profit. And the first thing I'll say for your listeners is the reason why it's important for you to turn your passion into profit is, as you mentioned earlier in the program, there are people who are really hurting right now because of the economic downturn. And one of the things that it's important to know, which might shock a lot of people, is that it's actually impossible. On my website, I have this, an article that explains this. It's impossible for you to raise your standard of living working a job. Jobs are designed to make the bosses wealthy, not the employees. So no matter how valuable you are, your boss is never going to pay you more. Pay you as much as you're worth, and he or she is never going to pay you such that it cripples the business. So there's always a limit on how much you'll get paid. You can get paid well, but you'll never get paid to the full potential that you actually have. So the first thing that I'd say is that you really have to turn your passion into profit, because the only way you can be yourself, you can raise your standard of living, is creating a product or a service that's uniquely yours that you sell to increasing numbers of people. So rather than keep talking, because I know you have other guests, I'll stop there, and you can ask me more questions as you go along.
Andrew, how do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, I'm just delighted to be in the same program with the fashion prophet himself, Mr. Walt Goodrich. Great to be able to speak with you. Walt and I go back many years, and I count him as one of my dear friends. But more than a friend, he's one of those individuals that can really help to challenge my thinking and help to make me think even that much clearer. And I'll piggyback to what Walt is saying by saying that everyone needs to build a team. And Walt represents a key part of my own thinking and my own development. And you need to always have people like a Walt Goodrich who are challenging your thinking and causing you to go beyond your existing comfort level. You know, I help people to make sure your passion is an intersection with a pressing need. It's great to turn your passion to profit, but you can only maximize a profit as long as you're solving a problem. And the problem can't be your problem. The problem has to be your prospect's problem. And so I tell folks, you have to get in the habit of what I call wondering and wandering. Just wander around your industry, wander around the marketplace, and just think about what are some of the possibilities when it comes to some of the pressing problems. Because to be a good marketer, you have to be out of your mind. You can't be in your mind concerned about your own bills. You have to be in the mind of your client. and really beginning to speak to their issues.
Okay. We see, I just want to pick up a caller, if that's okay, because she's been waiting since the beginning of the show. I see a caller on 704-573. Are you there?
Hi, Monique. Yes, I'm here.
Great. Can you please let us know who you are and what your question is?
Hi, I'm Raquel McLean Johnson, and I'm owner of my own business, Parable Learning. It's an instructional design and training business. I do a lot of freelance work, and it's funny how he just made the gentleman just made the statement because, you know, given the poor economy, I know that it's affecting everyone. It's affecting the large corporations, the small businesses that I try to work with. Yet and still, I feel like, you know, I have bills that I have to pay, and so sometimes I may short myself. And I hear what he's saying is I need to address the business's problems to have them think that they need me more than I need them, but it's really hard when we're in this real estate situation that we're in.
No, I mean, you have to remember what Henry Ford said during the Great Depression. Henry Ford said that these are the best of times, except that very few people realize it, all right? So these are actually the best of times, and you need to actually begin to change your consciousness, begin to change your thinking, how you view these as the best of times. I mean, President Obama is about to unleash $1 billion worth of new opportunities. And so all throughout the inauguration, I've been going with the big hits on people, let's stop partying for Obama and start positioning for Obama. And so if you have an instructional design and training company, you know, my question to you is, you know, how are you properly positioning your business, taking advantage of the billions that will go into construction, the billions that will go into renewable energy, the billions that will go into the green economy? And so any entrepreneur who's complaining about times are tough is only because they have not repositioned and repackaged your business to understand these are really the best of times.
Napoleon Hill says that every setback, every challenge comes with the seed of an equal or equivalent benefit, and that is so true. A lot of millionaires were made during the Great Depression. A lot of Fortune 500 companies now were actually started and launched during different recessions during the 70s and 80s. So there is always opportunity, and the people who provide excellent service and meet a need will always be in demand. So it's the challenge for you to, as Andrew said, figure out exactly what the need is for people in a recession and then fill that need. Now, one of the things I'd like to add that I talk about in Turn Your Passion into Profit is also aligning your business with an aspect of yourself. In addition to figuring out what the needs of the marketplace are, there is a particular thing that I encourage people to do, and that is to start a business that's in alignment with your purpose. So the four P's of turning your passion into profit are purpose, passion, product, and profit. And the first P, I think, is the most important, and that is your purpose. Why are you here on the planet? What need are you here to fill? What particular, you know, the question I simply ask people is, why are you here? And I'm going to mention four purposes that I've come up with, and you've without taking the test that's available on my passionprofit.com website, just ask yourself which one of these resonates with you. Are you here on the planet to be a creator, a savior, a guru, or a guide? And guide may need a little more explanation, but essentially sometimes people will just hear one of those and say, yes, that's me, I'm a savior. That means there's someone who's here to fix things. Or they might be a guru, that's someone who's here to impart knowledge and to share and to teach. Or they might be a creator and somebody who's here to create something new, like an artist or a singer or a designer. So when you first determine what your purpose is, then you'll usually find 9 times out of 10 that your passion helps you fulfill that purpose. So your guest, your call-in, Raquel, is in instructional design. Now, I need her to explain a little bit more about what she does, but one of the things that I would encourage her to do to make sure her business is as successful as possible is that she's in alignment with her true purpose. If it's a guru, if it's a savior, if she's here to heal and fix things, then that might give her some additional insight into how to structure her business and her marketing plan so that her business can be much more in tune to what the marketplace is looking for.
But in terms, but what she's asking is, how can she get a comparable rate for what she's offering? Are you saying that she needs to backtrack and see if what she's offering is the right product?
Well, that's what I would. I mean, we only have I think your show is an hour. We only have an hour show, so I couldn't give her the full coaching style that I would use. But that's what I would do. I would, as a coach, would want to make sure that I'm heading her down the right path, because if she's not in alignment with her purpose, it's not a difficult thing to figure out, but it helps her to feel much more comfortable with the business that she's starting. But in terms of you said the question was how to gain. I'm sorry, could
she's
you rephrase the question?
She's not getting the payment that she feels she deserves for the product that she's offering. I think people are kind of hemming and hawing every time she tries to give a price.
Yeah, it's probably because that's not what she's good at. So what Walt is saying is that there's an aspect of your business that she really enjoys. And so I can tell that she does not enjoy sales. All right, and what Walt is saying is that if her purpose is to guide people, is support, to encourage people, then her nightmare job will be that of a used car salesperson. And so what Walt wants you to do is to step into your purpose and build a team of people around you who can do those things that you don't enjoy doing. And so I learned the hard way that I need to stop teaching people everything I know. I don't need to teach you how to sell. You're not called to sell. Remember your purpose, as Walt is saying, and then you need to have enough of a sense of discernment to find the salesperson to make that sales happen.
Wow. One of the things that I've learned as well is that when you're not able to get the amount of money that you feel you deserve, it could be a very simple – two reasons generally pop up. One is you're not confident enough, as Andrew mentioned, to or comfortable enough to do the sales and the negotiation that's necessary, and that's a flaw that a lot of entrepreneurs, including myself, happen to have, is that we don't value ourselves enough to say, yes, my price is X amount of dollars an hour, and I'm sticking to it. The other thing that I learned personally is that if your clientele is balking at the price that you set, you might need a different clientele.
Wow.
And that means that you might be marketing to people who really can't afford your services. And you, once you start to value yourself more and what it is you do, really start to value and believe that you are worth X amount of dollars an hour, you start to attract a different sort of clientele. So it really always starts with you. Once you value your service, that energy comes forth in how you market yourself and how comfortable you are with saying, hey, you know, if you can't pay my price, fine, you know, I'm not going to undersell myself, because you can only do that, Raquel, so many times before the landlord comes knocking on your door and evicts you for not being able to pay your rent. So it is a hard lesson, but it is a lesson you have to learn how to do. I had to learn that myself. I got evicted when I quit my 9-to-5 job in 1995. I actually ended up getting evicted 3 different times from my apartment, and I tell people that because to let them know that sometimes you have to really hit rock bottom before you get to the point where you say, you know what, underselling my value is not working. I really need to stick to stick to my guns and charge what I'm worth. And it's sometimes a hard lesson you have to learn in order to be able to do that.
Right. Raquel, was that okay for you? Okay.
Might have lost it. But also, along those same lines of pricing, probably we have to do is, as you said, it's the best of times. Widen our scopes, widen our searches. Perhaps, you know, the product that we're offering, we're getting at a certain fixed cost, but there's more and more people out there that are, you know, stepping back or backing down or slashing their prices. We could get the same product that we want to sell for a little cheaper as well.
Right, and something else that you can do, too, is you can look to have what they call a line extension, is that, you know, what you want to do, the fastest way to anyone who's listening to me right now to increase their sales is to sell more stuff to your existing clients. It is to get a greater share of wallet. It takes 10 times more money and effort to get a new client than it does to sell something else to an existing client. And so, you know, going back to Raquel, she offers instructional design. She has a list of clients who she worked with in the past. Well, guess what? Those clients may be looking at purchasing other software products or purchasing equipment or even doing printing. I mean, in my previous company, I had a database marketing company, worked with major packaged goods firms like Procter & Gamble and Kraft Foods, helping them develop database marketing campaigns. But guess what? This same brand manager needed someone to print a coupon for them. Well, guess what? I got into the printing business because I had an existing relationship. You see, the most expensive thing to acquire in business is trust. Once you establish someone's trust, you can then leverage that trust to other more profitable areas. That's what people need to do. If you have an existing client base, I encourage everyone who's listening right now to survey your clients and ask them what you look to spend in the next 3 or 6 months. You'll be surprised. And you can use a simple tool like SurveyMonkey.com. That's SurveyMonkey.com to survey your existing clients, people who have money, who have trusted you in the past, and get to know what their upcoming purchases are.
I'm going to suggest two, Monique, this is real quick. There are two suggestions I'll make to Raquel so she can come away with something really concrete.
And I'm back on the line, by the way. I got disconnected.
Okay. Yeah.
One, Andrew and I both have books as well, but one of the things we find ourselves doing is recommending other gurus' books as well. So there's two things that I'd suggest her. One is Getting Business to Come to You. That's a book by Paul and Sarah Edwards, Getting Business to Come to You. And then the other one is Multiple Streams of Income. And one of the things that the author of Multiple Streams talks about is what Andrew just mentioned in terms of upselling or selling to an existing client base. So you have a large, you think of it as an inverted funnel, and at the bottom of that funnel is your largest customer base. Those are the people who buy your basic service. And then as the funnel moves up, it gets a little smaller, and that represents the next level of clients who might order something a little more expensive from you, like direct coaching, so or video, or something customized. And then you move up the funnel, and it gets even smaller still, and that represents a smaller group, smaller segment of your existing customer base that would be willing to pay $5,000 to come and spend a weekend with you doing what it is you do. So it goes into more detail in the book, but you can then implement exactly what Andrew was saying and actually start to sell more things to your existing client base, and actually you'll see it's amazing. The more people trust you, the more they'll be willing to get the finer points of your expertise that they won't be able to get just from your basic product. So that's one way that you can start to generate more money, as Andrew said, selling more things to more people. Because it's only, you know, it's only two ways you can make more money in business: is either you sell more, or sell at a higher price.
Well, let me just get the name of those two titles again, please.
Getting Business to Come to You,
okay,
by Paul and Sarah Edwards, and Multiple Streams of Income. And the author actually has two books, Multiple Streams of Income and Multiple Streams of Internet Income.
Okay, well, you know, we have a list of callers who are waiting to talk to you. So I'm going to have to cut you right there on Raquel. But Raquel, was that okay for you?
Yeah, that was excellent, and he hit the nail on the head when he said that the part that I'm not passionate about is negotiating. I'm passionate about what it is that I do, but not the other business aspects of it.
And
okay.
Robert G.
Thank
Allen
you so
is the name of the author.
Okay. Well, we have a caller for you. If you read the Charlotte Post, you saw that we did a write-up with Walt, and what he did was analyze the business, you know, from a top line. It certainly wasn't a deep analysis because it was a short piece, but he looked at Rasha, her name is Rasha Brown, her cake-making business, and he spoke about what he thought that she could do to give her business the start that it needed, and to make those profits right away. So, Walt, I have for you Rasha Brown on the line. Rasha, are you there?
I'm here.
Great. Can you talk a little bit about your business, what you do, and when you got started?
Okay, first of all, I want to say hello, Monique. Hello, Jamie.
Hi.
Hi, Morrison. How are you? I have a business that I recently started. The name of it is Pink Chocolate Cupcakes, and I specialize in baking great tasting vegan cupcakes. The name was inspired by my daughter, whom is the youngest of three children, and one of my biggest reasons for starting a business was so that I could have more flexibility and time to spend with my children and my family.
Okay. Well, first of all, Rasha, I applaud you for starting that. I too quit my job in corporate America because I wanted to have more time to go see movies in the middle of the day. It was all a lifestyle thing. And as silly as that may sound to people, that was the main motivating factor. Every day I would come into work and see people, see myself working for somebody else, and it just drove me crazy that I didn't have my freedom during the middle of the day, and that's what really motivated me. So there's nothing wrong with whatever the motivation. If you wanted to have more time to spend with your cat, that would be just as valuable a motivating factor. Now, the thing I mentioned in the article is I would first want to find out, Rasha, if you feel you are a creator, a savior, or a guru in your work. Are you here to create something new that other people don't know how to do? Are you here to, does your product have some sort of healing or therapeutic value, or are you here to teach others? Do you get a thrill out of teaching others to do what it is you do in your business?
I believe I'm a creator.
Okay, great. So that means, for those listening, that she realizes that she has a gift for creating something that didn't exist before. Really simple. So your cakes are vegan cupcakes. One of the things that I would suggest that you do, as I mentioned in the article, is to, now I know what vegan cupcakes are because I've been vegan since 92, so that would be something in and of itself that would attract me. But you mentioned that you are going out and giving samples of your work to businesses. Now the average person out there is not vegan. Are you targeting health food stores, Whole Foods, food co-ops? Are you targeting places where vegetarians and vegans are going to find treats?
No, I have not yet.
Okay, that is the first thing that I would suggest that you do is don't attempt to convert people who want to eat sugary, pesticide-laden, artificially flavored Twinkies. Go after the market where it exists. Go to the health food stores. You can maybe set up a table and give out free samples. You can find, and these days more and more cities have health food stores, small and large, like Whole Foods or Mrs. Green's, where you can actually strike agreements to sell your products there. So that's the first thing that I would do to maximize your marketing is to go where your buyers are. I'll leave Andrew to contribute as well.
Yeah, Andrew, do you have anything to add on that?
Yeah, well, let me just finish eating my Twinkie first before I...
thank you very much.
Right. But, you know, here's my point, and it's good that you hear from a slightly different vantage point. You know, I speak to thousands of people a year about business success and startup and becoming an entrepreneur. I want people to get very, very clear about why you're in business. Now, it makes a good soundbite to say that I started a business because I want to spend more time with my family and kids. But from a business standpoint, that intention could actually be a distraction because there's one reason and one reason only why you form a business. Do you know why you're in business? So you're not in business, and I want to apologize if I sound too harsh, because sometimes I can kind of come across in a very direct way. It's only because I just work with so many folks, and I can see problems begin to develop down the road if we're not clear about our intentions. And so what should be the number one reason why you're in business?
To make some money.
To make money.
Right, right. It's not really to make money. The number one business is to turn a profit. The number one reason to be in business is to turn a profit. And so on this radio show, you can tell people, okay, I started a business because I want to spend more time with my kids. But when speaking to investors and when speaking to a larger community, I started a business because there's some money out there. I started a business because there's a huge problem out there. I started a business because there's this huge community of individuals who can't get, products like this, and they represent X billions of dollars and they're at a restaurant and they're eating vegan food, but they don't have the pastries. And so I started a business to serve a growing need. It may sound simplistic, but it's super important that you kind of get that that mindset, because if not, you actually have a hobby and you're doing stuff and then you're wondering why it's not growing. It's not growing because you're not as intentional as you should be. And so, you know, I believe in scale. So people who work with me, I don't believe in starting something and we're going to do $100,000 a year in sales. No, we need to be going from zero to millions in a short period of time. And it's possible if you have the intention that it's possible. And so Walt was leading you down the correct path in terms of, you know, where do people eat? Where do they shop? And so you need to be telling me, you know, what are the top three food retailers that vegans go to? What are the top conferences? What are the top websites? What are the top trade shows? That's where you need to be. And then so your issue right now shouldn't be around can I find any customers. Your issue really should be around manufacturing. And so you should be finding someone who can handle a big order of 10 to 15,000 units. And so this way you're planning to grow the company rapidly based upon you being able to maintain a quality product and be able to manufacture it in mass as well.
Okay. Wow. Okay, Rasha, that's a tall order.
It is, and thank you very much for your suggestion. And I want to ask you, how could you give me a little bit more information on how to go about starting the process of finding a manufacturer?
Yeah, I mean, my best advice to you comes from Booker T. Washington, who said, "Success leaves footprints." All right, and so what's happening in Russia? Don't take any of my comments personally. Once again, I keep making you apologies because there's so many people. What's happening is that many people are actually living in a trance where you're not becoming more observant of what's around you. And so I'm saying to you, and I say to all my clients, people pay me money for me to give them an answer that they already have. All right? And so now I challenge you by saying you already know the answer to that question. And so I'm so rough. I tell people, don't ask me a question that you know the answer to already. And so when it comes to finding a manufacturer, you know the answer. All you got to do is to go into comparable stores, pick up comparable products, turn it around, and the manufacturers are right there. And so there's some deeper questions you're supposed to be asking me, but you will miss that question because oftentimes we are distracted. And if there was one thing I could get all the listeners to begin to do, is to develop a habit of silence, a habit of doing nothing, a habit of solitude, because then your real questions and your real wisdom will begin to emerge.
Rasha, now that the internet is up and running full blown, there is no question on earth that you ever have to ask anyone, including me or Andrew, for the answer. You can just go into Google and type cupcake manufacturers, and you'll have to spend the time doing research, but the information is out there. All right. That's a tip I would give you just in terms of finding whatever business you're in. If you're looking to manufacture shoelaces, you can go to the Thomas Register, and you can have a list of all the companies around the country that manufacture shoelaces. If you're looking for baking facilities, you can. I think the Thomas Register would also have those as well. But you can just search if you go to the library and ask your librarian for the Thomas Register, that can help. Or just go on Google and do a search, and you'll find thousands of companies out there advertising their baking facilities.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much. Helpful, Rasha.
Yes, very. Thank you.
Great. Next caller is from South Carolina. 803-719, are you on the air? Hello? Okay. Well, I'm not sure what happened to that caller, but just now that we have a moment to pause, are there any tips that you'd like to give people who are thinking about pursuing their passion, either of you?
Well, first of all, I'll have to be I'll recommend my website, passionprofit.com. And one of the things that you can do there, I have some frequently asked questions, and I also have a personality test. And that's the first place that I would encourage someone to start, just to start to get a sense of who they are, why they're here on the planet. You can take the the Passion Profile Personality Test at passionprofit.com.
Okay.
As a starting point to figuring out what your passion is. The people who I run into are people who don't know what their passion is, people who might have an idea what their passion is but are looking for ways to profitize it, and then people who may be actually engaged in a business already, like your callers, and just looking for ways to optimize the business. But everyone can be helped by learning a little bit more about themselves, what drives them, what their ideal day is, what their strengths and weaknesses are, so that, as Andrew said, they can build a team around their passion as well. That's vitally important, so that you can spend the time doing what you enjoy doing. That's the whole bottom line premise of turning your passion into profit, is that you spend your days doing things that you enjoy, that are fulfilling for you.
Well, along those same lines, Walt, let's say they take your personality exam, mm-hmm. and then they find out, like I believe Raquel was saying earlier, that she's not a negotiator.
Right.
So, does she get discouraged? Does she increase her skills? Or does she find someone who is a negotiator?
Yes, she should get discouraged and give up and go back to work for someone else. No, I'm just kidding. Of course, you never, ever, ever give up. There is nothing that anyone has done that you cannot do. The real strength of a successful entrepreneur is not that they know how to do everything themselves. And as Andrew said, you know people who do know the things that you are weak in. So, no, you find it, you build a team, you find somebody who is good at the thing that you're not good at, and you partner with them, not necessarily as a partner in your business, but as a freelancer. So if I needed somebody to do sales, I wouldn't hire somebody and take on the responsibilities of having an employee. I would partner with another person whose passion is sales, so that we complement each other. My passion is being the creative part, and their passion is sales. So we work together as two independent companies working with each other. That way, no one is unduly dependent on the other for their income or for their survival. You have your sales business, and you are free to have other clients who you do this your sales thing for, and I don't have the burden of having you as an employee.
Right. Glad that you made that point, because a lot of entrepreneurs think they have to do everything on their own. They'd be the cook, the chief cook and bottle washer, as they say in Jamaica, where it's not really all on you, but you can actually find someone who is better expertise at it.
Right. It's a hard thing to do, because as entrepreneurs, we tend to want things done a particular way, and I'm guilty of that too. We tend to want things done a particular way. We tend to want it done fast, and the fastest person to get in touch with to get the things done that you want to get done is yourself. And I would suggest that they read another book, and this was referred to me. Andrew, I still have the copy you gave to me, The E-Myth, Revisited by Michael Gerber.
Yes, I use that book for my class that I teach, my college class, and I use it for different things, not just entrepreneurial type things, but I think it just has some great advice for different aspects of your life.
Right. And building a business that's not just entirely dependent on you, because that's one of the worst things you want to do, because then you're basically just trading one form of enslavement for another. Instead of, you're not creating the freedom that you want. One of the things Gerber says in that book is the only reason to start a business is to sell it.
Wow.
And
right.
That's something that scares a lot of entrepreneurs who are passionate about their business, because they want to hold on to it. They don't want to let it go. That's why they do everything themselves. They're afraid. They might be a control freak, just like I am. They're afraid of letting go. They're afraid of assigning the tasks to somebody else. So they end up crippling the business, because it can't grow as fast and as successfully as it could if you built a team. As Andrew said, you end up being the chief cook and bottle washer, and you stifle the growth of the company. So you have to learn to be able to let go, and the ultimate letting go is reaching the point where you say, okay, this business can now run on its own. It's now generating X millions of dollars. Now it's time to flip it, sell it to Microsoft, and I can now retire on a beach in the
I hear you. Andrew, what's next for you?
Well, what's next for me is to follow the same advice I give to all my clients, is that you want to be very cognizant of your identity. You know, I begin to talk more about identity more than anything else, because from your identity flows your business, flows your profits, it flows your posture. And so I had one identity as an entrepreneur, as a direct marketer. That was an identity comes with certain baggage. My next identity was as a trainer. And what's interesting is that when people used to call me up to do motivational speaking, I would tell them, I'm not a motivational speaker, I'm a trainer. And then I will launch into a sense of my identity. So I want people out there to be very cognizant of if you are defending a limiting identity, because motivational speakers get paid actually 10 times more money than trainers. And so here I'm trying to stay with a limiting belief that's not really serving me over the long term. And so I want you to be cognizant of your identity, because as you begin to change your identity, you also change your income as well.
You know,
last caller on, and I want to make sure we get her in because she got disconnected, came on again. 803-719, are you there?
Hello, this is Yvette in South Carolina. How are you?
Great.
Can you guys
Great.
Hear me? Hi, Monique and Jamie and guests. I do apologize. I'm actually going into a class in about 15 minutes, so I had to disconnect, and I'm going to try and get my question in quickly. Thanks for taking this last call. I am currently launching a corporate health promotion business, and I have a background in biology, nutrition, and nursing. And I worked in management with Blue Cross Blue Shield in New York in corporate health promotion. And what I found is that there is a need because of the rising healthcare costs, and companies are working to offset premiums that employees currently pay. And I just wanted to just get your thought about corporate health promotion at a time where we're in a recession. If small businesses to mid-sized businesses would be interested in corporate health promotion programs from someone who is not employed with the company?
It can't be boring. You know, a great book to read by Seth Godin is Purple Cow. And so If you're going to go into an industry, you have to be the purple cow. And so corporate health promotion, it has to become exciting, has to become sexy, has to become very appealing. You've got to be over the top. You have to kind of develop a caricature. You've got to walk in there. Imagine walking into a Fortune 500 company dressed as a purple cow, and you're talking about corporate health promotion. And so if you're going to go into this thing, go into a level of zeal and passion that makes you distinctive, that makes you memorable. Most marketing is boring because it's not distinctive. And I want you to have an edge about what you're doing. This way your message will be heard.
Okay.
And one of the things that I would suggest to help you be that purple cow, now I have a particular passion for health, being vegetarian. I have a perspective that may not be shared by the average person who's gone to traditional medical schools and gotten a traditional education in health, because the health industry, and you got to stop me, Monique, because I will ramble on this one. The
it's going to happen.
The health industry.
We're getting ready to get cut off, so you're going to have
to. The health industry is not designed, I'll make it real short. The health industry is not designed to make you healthy. It's designed to keep you buying pills. That's it in a nutshell. So if you're coming from a different perspective of what real health is not Subway sandwiches or salads at McDonald's. There is a whole nother side to this thing we call health that is growing. And the earlier caller talking about vegan cookies is on what I perceive to be the right path, where we are moving to more natural remedies, more natural concepts of what health is. Health is not, you don't get sick because you have a deficiency of drugs. So prescribing drugs is not the answer to health. The answer to health is eating more natural food that the body was made to eat, that the Creator designed the bodies for. So if you're approaching health from a more natural perspective, that can give you the purple cow aspect to bring to your business. So that's a personal thing that I would suggest, that you really look at what it is you're saying. Are you telling people that they can still eat eat out and eat fast food, but just change their portions? Then that's not real health, and eventually you won't be as effective, I believe, in getting that message across to the public.
Well, I'm really, and thanks for that. I'm looking at it from a wellness perspective,
mm-hmm.
not from just a health promotion, but I'm looking at it as corporate health promotion, but it's more wellness also intertwining nutrition into that. So it's the mind, body, spirit point of view as opposed to just health.
Once again, you have to go where the money is. People will spend more money on their kids than they will on themselves. And so think about coming into big corporations but doing programs for maybe for children, you may find a more receptive audience.
Interesting. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. Very quickly, can both of you tell us where our audience can reach you?
Sure. You can find me online at smallbusinesscamp.com. That's three words, smallbusinesscamp.com.
You can find me on the Pacific island of Saipan in the South Pacific, where I've escaped from corporate America. But you can read the story of how I turned my passion into my own escape at passionprofit.com, or you can pick up a copy of the book, Turn Your Passion into Profit, a step-by-step guide for transforming any talent, hobby, or product idea into a money-making venture. You can get that on Amazon, or you can get it as an e-book also at passionprofit.com, PassionProfit.
Well, thank you so much. We actually cannot take any more callers right now. We're getting ready to sign off, but thank you both for being on the McKenzie Business Forum.
Thank you for having us.
Great. Okay, good people, we are coming to a close, and we thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We had two wonderful guests. Andrew Morrison, we call him the Million Dollar Man. You saw him on the Oprah Winfrey Show. And we had Walt Goodrich, the Passion Prophet, telling us how to turn those passions into profit. I hope you enjoyed our show this afternoon. Most importantly, I hope you're going to implement the information that you just heard so you can shine in 2009. Please join us next Thursday.
Same time. Same channel.
In the meantime, please check out my weekly business column that runs in the Charlotte Post for that informative, insightful, innovative education that you won't find anywhere else.
And let us hear from you. This show was brought to you by Small Business Bootcamp. You can find out more about our guest on www.smallbusinessbootcamp.biz, B-I-Z.
Until next week, I wish you all the joy your heart can stand.
And all the profits your bank account can house.
Again, this is the McKenzie Business Forum with Monique.
And Jamie McKenzie.
Take care.